Welcome to another broadcast of Celebrating Truth with Dr. E. Fay Williams, Esquire, on the Artist First Radio Network. Dr. Williams currently serves as National Chair of the National Congress of Black Women and President of Natural Health Options. All past shows can be downloaded free on demand. Visit the archives for Dr. Williams and Celebrating Truth at artistfirst.com. And now, here's your host, Dr. Williams.
Thank you, Tony, and good evening. I'm Fay Williams, your host, and welcome to Celebrating Truth. Celebrating Truth is brought to you by the National Congress of Black Women. Our Celebrating Truth producer is Ms. Clem Clark, and she'll be co-hosting with me today as we review 2011 and some of the things that come to mind as we move into 2012. Clem has hosted the show in my absence, and she brings great guests to the show frequently, but she also has great ideas on many subjects. So I invited her to be with me today so that we can talk about some of the more memorable things of 2012. Some of them, of course, are things we want to remember. Some of them are things we would like to forget. Hi, Clem, and welcome to Celebrating Truth.
Hi, Dr. Williams, and thank you so much for having me on.
Well, I certainly hope that you've had a wonderful holiday season thus far.
I had a fantastic holiday season with my son. It was just real relaxing, not a whole lot of guests, and definitely not a whole lot of family this year.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's great. Christmas Day is usually a fasting day for me, so I just sort of got up, went for my walk, and did without all that great food that other people had on yesterday. And then, of course, I got a sore throat after that. Maybe I'm supposed to eat something. So I'm fasting the 2 days, and I usually do it for 3 days in a row. So after tomorrow, I'll be back on track, and I'll do the same on Thanksgiving and on New Year's Day. And that way I don't have to feel too guilty when the week after Christmas, the week after the holiday comes.
Yeah, well, I tell you, fasting is sure a great idea, Dr. Williams, because it really, cleanses you on so many different levels and just spiritually just opens you up, allows you to just kind of be still and be quiet, and your body's not full of all kind of toxins.
Mm-hmm. Well, I do, the food fast, but my friend Dick Gregory does even a talking fast. He says you need to give your brain, your body a big rest, so he does not talk on the same days that I fast. I can commit to the no food, but I said no talking is kind of out of the question for me. My family would think I have totally gone off the wall if I don't call them to wish them, happy holidays or something.
Well, it's interesting, Dr. Williams. I think I could do both.
okay.
Not talk and not eat.
Mm-hmm. Well, I don't do a whole lot of talking because I'm home alone usually on holidays, and that sort of cuts back on the talking, but it does make sense, too, that you're giving your brain a rest from all the talking because, once I get wound up during the week or off holiday times, I'm usually there for hours and hours and hours. But as we get started today, I want to remind our listeners to not forget that the 2012 elections will be coming soon. And, of course, it seems like they're already here because we've had that Republican primary going on for a long, long time. And we're going to be talking about that a little bit later in the program. We're talking about some challenges to voting in 2012. We want to really discuss that sort of like an orchestrated effort to prevent people from voting, or at least some people from voting. At any rate, don't forget to register, to update your registration, and register in a party so you can help to decide who your party's nominee will be. I already know who mine will be, but you never know who hasn't made up their mind yet. I would assume you've made up your mind, right, Clem?
Oh, without a doubt.
All right, then. No need of changing horses in the middle of the stream. That's what my mom always said. Right. Well, everybody should just take a careful look at the candidates, especially in the Republican primary, so that you have no trouble deciding who the best candidate is. And as Clem and I have said, we already know who ours are, but there are others who may still have a job to do. Now, remember what you support and match those things up with the candidates who seem to be able to do them, or at least verbalize that they will be doing them. And I think the choice will be easier in 2012 than it was in 2008. Well, Clem, we have a number of things to talk about today as we reflect on 2011 and perhaps talk about some lessons learned to carry us into 2012. I'm not sure how you say that. Do you say 2012 or 2012?
Well, you could say it either way. I'd just say 2012 because it seemed like it's just so much easier. But I've heard people say 2012.
Mm-hmm. Well, since we're just a few days from the first Republican contest in Iowa, we definitely want to talk about that, as I said. And Celebrating Truth is brought to you by the National Congress of Black Women, the number one organization dedicated especially to the needs of black women and their families. We invite all of our listeners to visit our website at www.nationalcongressbw.org. You'll find lots of great information, including greetings from the First Lady, Michelle Obama, and information. So just stay with us, and there'll be information there on many, many different subjects. So stay with us, because we're going to talk a little bit about Congressman James Sensenbrenner and his insensitive remarks about the First Lady here over the last few weeks and days. And if you'd like to join the great things that we do in the communities across the nation, just give us a call at 202-678-6788. Or maybe you'd like to be a donor to some of our community service programs. Again, you can go to our website for that at nationalcongressbw.org. Now, Clem, you brought to us a young woman this past year who was just elected at the time that we had her on in San Francisco. How's her career coming along?
She is doing absolutely magnificent. That would be Supervisor Malia Cohen. Dr. Williams, and if you recall, at the beginning of the year, she has been truly a highlight here in San Francisco in California politics. She was sworn in on January 8, 2011, so she's coming up to her one-year anniversary. And since that time, she has been really extremely busy in a positive way. She's passed quite a few, really critical pieces of legislation. And so she has really just jumped right in and just hit the ground running, and she's really gained the respect of her colleagues, and she has really gained the respect of the mayor of San Francisco. As a matter of fact, Dr. William, the mayor, mayor who was just elected in November, he is now spending the week out of the country, and to show just how much respect that they have for Supervisor Cohen, he asked her to be the acting or interim mayor while he's out on vacation. So she has all the powers and authorities of the office of the executive branch of the mayor, and she's serving as the acting mayor from December 22nd through December 31st, and she's doing fantastic. She has a bright future ahead of her.
Well, wonderful. Maybe someday we'll look forward to talking about Mayor Cohen. You think that's in the making at some point?
I absolutely do, Dr. Williams. I see that for her, because when you're in San Francisco, because we're a city and county, you can serve on the Board of Supervisors, which is the legislative branch of government here for two four-year terms. So she'll just be entering her second year term in a couple of weeks. And so she has three more years on her first term, and then she can run again for four more years. So she has a total of about 7 years. And I think after that, she is absolutely she's already in the process of thinking about running for mayor of San Francisco.
Well, you know, that's something, Clem, that we don't do enough, or we don't promote our young people when they're just getting started or trying to get started. And I think that we all in this new year should pledge to do that, because many young people have so many wonderful ideas. They have the energy. They're willing to work. And, you know, they don't sit around and say, well, you know, we've always done it this way or we've always done it that way and it didn't work. You know, they're just willing to try something new. And so I just salute her, and I salute you for taking interest in her career and helping her in all the ways that you can. And I know that it probably won't be very long before we'll be honoring her as one of our honorees in the National Congress of Black Women.
Well, I really appreciate you saying that, Dr. Williams, because you are so correct. And it is just, I don't know if it's epidemic or what within our community, but we don't do enough of grooming leaders, young leaders who are coming up to pass the torch on to them. For some reason, I'll give you a great example real quick. There was a big meeting of African-American ministers here on Saturday morning, and there were three young African-American brothers who were invited to this meeting. They were from San Francisco State. And to make a long story short, these young men came in with all these ideas about, you know, 21st century technology, you know, taking the church, streaming it, and texting, and a social, having the ministers come up with a social media plan. And they were all but discounted or dismissed. And a lot of times we don't do enough to encourage and uplift our young up-and-coming leaders and try to groom them and nurture them and mentor them and prepare them for when the old our elders who have paved the way transition. We don't do enough of that. So I thank God that he has given me wisdom and has just given me just the ability to know that, hey, you know, to whom much is given, much is required. And I've had great mentors, and it would behoove me not to mentor other young black women who are coming up behind me.
Well, you know, it's important for us to think about grooming others, because it's the highest respect to have a young person who's trained to follow in your footsteps and to do even better than you did. I think that's the whole point of mentoring and grooming young people, not to, say, put down what you're doing, but teach them how to appreciate their past and extend that past by doing something wonderful. So I hope that in 2012 you'll remind me to keep on doing that, and I'll remind you, and if we remind a few more people, perhaps we could get in the business of grooming people to come on behind us. I know each year I try to have several young interns, and I'm always appreciative when they write back and tell me how much they've learned, and not just that, but what they are doing now as a result of the opportunity that I've been able to give them in the National Congress of Black Women. So I want to do even more of that. This Friday, we'll have what we call our young ambassadors, to whom we're teaching conflict resolution. We have an ambassador who's coming in to talk with them about how diplomats, you know, worldwide diplomats, resolve problems. I mean, just little things like that. It may not be so meaningful to an adult, but to a young person who's never met an ambassador before, this should form a lasting impression on them. And we should not just say, well, I can't do big things, so I won't do all the little things that may be helpful to young people. And I'm sure you have young people who work with you in many ways, whether it's on a job or just in the community, and they find what you're doing very valuable, and it may take years for them to tell you how what you're doing impacted their lives, but ultimately they do.
And Dr. Williams, real quick, before we transition on to the next subject, I mean, you're so modest, and since we're on the phone together, I want to tell you thank you, because little do you know, like this year, you have no idea, you have truly blessed me. I mean, you have been a mentor to me, because I don't know if you recall, I remember back here earlier this year, I was ranting and raving and all this about how, you know, it was unfair, how people always want you to volunteer and they don't look back. And you really, I wouldn't say you put me in my place, but you gave me some wise counsel. And I took it as that. I took it as wise counsel. And I was able to grow from what you shared with me. And so when you impart wisdom to me, this year and working with you, serving as your producer, so to speak, it has been fantastic, because it has been a growing experience for me, because I've gotten a chance to watch you and see how you do and see what type of leadership, what type of leader you are, and be able to glean from you and what you model, and then be able to take that and offer it to Supervisor Malia Cohen. So you have been grooming me, and I, in return, whatever wisdom and knowledge and experience that you've given to me, I've imparted to her and so many other young sisters coming up behind me.
Well, thank you so much, Clem. I appreciate that, and I'm sure I'm going to play this recording over and over and over. Sometimes, you know, we get a little bit depressed. We think maybe we're not getting through to people with whom we work. Of course, that hasn't been true for you, because you've always been very positive with me, and you've been very helpful to the work I do with the National Congress of Black Women. But for your help, I'm not sure that we could have carried on Celebrating Truth this long. But for those of you who are just joining us, I want to remind you we're talking with Clem Clark. In fact, we're just having a conversation about what's been going on in 2011 and the lessons we can carry over to 2012. And I want to remind you, when you come to Washington, D.C., you're invited to stop by the Capitol Visitor Center and see Sojourner Truth, the memorial our organization, the National Congress of Black Women, donated to the United States Congress nearly 3 years ago, and Sojourner presides over Emancipation Hall. She's the first to be unveiled there. That is the first of any kind of unveiling done in Emancipation Hall. and she is the first black woman ever to have a permanent memorial in the United States Capitol anywhere. And yes, we celebrate women and their achievements. We do that through many women every year as we have our awards luncheon every year in September. In the coming year, it'll be September 23rd here in Washington, D.C. And for those of you who attend the Congressional Black Caucus, you know that it's the Sunday morning following the Congressional Black Caucus. We also invite you to support our efforts by being a member of the National Congress or by becoming a donor to our great projects. And right now, in addition to raising funds for our community service projects, we're gladly accepting donations for any amount for our housing fund. That's right. We're going to be moving into our new office very soon. Just go to www.nationalcongressbw.org where you can join or you can donate to our housing fund or any of our projects. There are a lot of awesome things going on in our community, and we find that we have to celebrate our own truth because we either get left out of mainstream media or too often we find ourselves denigrated in the media. So, Clem, you brought to our attention a friend down in Yazoo City, Mississippi last year who was doing great things in her community, and she was honored by the National Congress of Black Women last Sunday. Would you bring us up to date on what Elaine Owens is doing now?
She is doing great. She's still doing the Lifesavers program. They just did the big Make a Difference project or volunteer outreach project in Mississippi back here in September. And then since September, she's been, like, every weekend, she's been having, like, these youth symposium where she's been talking about, because in the Mississippi Delta, we have a big problem, big issue with sexually transmitted diseases with teenagers and teen pregnancy and teen obesity. So every Saturday or every other Saturday, she's been collaborating with other nonprofit and other kind of youth-focused organizations to bring awareness to all these different issues, whether it's about healthy living or healthy lifestyles or making smart and good choices and decisions. She's been doing that. And you're talking about a soldier on the front line, an unsung hero. Glory Elaine Owens is truly an unsung hero.
Well, wonderful. And we're so happy to have honored her. You always bring to us such great people. And, of course, I have had the opportunity to get a chapter started down in Gulfport, Mississippi. I know you're from Mississippi and you have an interest in that state. We have a bishop that I was working with on the British Petroleum case to try to get people in the Gulf Coast paid. And, of course, he's introduced us to a lot of wonderful women in Gulfport, Mississippi, so we should be announcing a chapter there soon.
Wonderful.
Now, would you tell our guests about Facebook and Twitter for us and what they can do?
I sure will. For all of Dr. Williams' Celebrating True listening audience, we encourage you to please go on to Twitter and become and join us. Follow us at CTruthProducer. That's, again, the Twitter address is at CTruthProducer. And just keep up with what's going on with Celebrating Truth, the National Congress of Black Women, President Obama, just any type of issue that are impacting our black community. I try to quickly get on Twitter and tweet about it. And as well as on Facebook, we have a Facebook page. So we encourage you to go on there and like us. And you can find us at Celebrating Truth, and that's on Facebook.
Okay, then. In other words, Clem has gotten us into this social media, and we're trying hard to keep up with the young people. So I just want to remind you that we have many, many wonderful things also on our website. Clem mentioned information from the president. But if you go to whitehouse.gov, you'll also find a lot of great information on almost any subject that you might want to know about what this president is doing, what he's accomplished, what he's trying to accomplish. And that's in whether it's health, whether it's the economy, or what have you. Because there again, many of the good and great stories about this White House are not being told. That's why we have Celebrating Truth, so that we can tell stories that are not often told. Let's move now, Clem, to some of the other stories of 2011. We started off our year in a very, very sad way last year, and we pray for a better start this year. But there was Congresswoman Gabrielle Giffords who was shot while we were still pretty much recovering from Christmas and New Year's vacation. Do you remember where you were, what you were doing when that happened, and what were your thoughts?
I remember it vividly. As a matter of fact, Dr. Williams, I was sitting in. She was being sworn in at that very moment, Supervisor Malia Cohen. I was sitting in her office because the board chamber was too full. And so her family and close friends were in her office having a little private reception. And we heard come across the computer, the internet, that Congresswoman Gabrielle Giffords had been killed. They initially had announced that she had been killed. Mm-hmm. And we were just stunned. And so we switched from the swearing in over to the CNN, and sure enough, there it was. And it was just to hear the shooter and his mental issues, and we were just horrified.
Yes, and of course, sometimes we forget that while she is beginning to recover, there were many others who lost their lives, and our prayers go out to the families of those. And, you know, it seems that that would have been a lesson to us about just allowing any and everybody to have access to a gun and to weapons, you know, they don't know how to control because of their mental state. And I guess in these last 2 to 3 years, it just seems that guns have become more prevalent in our society. And I know before President Obama, I'd never heard of anyone being able to come near the president with a gun. But suddenly, people are talking about Second Amendment rights, and they're showing off guns with people who are in the park or near the president. I just think that sometimes our whole nation is just losing it. And I wonder if a lot of it has to do with our president and who he is.
Yeah, I Dr. Williams, not to interrupt you, but yes, I believe that there is such a visceral hate. And I remember when I was in Mississippi back here in May and then June, and then just recently visiting my mother, and it's just all on the spewing of the hatred toward the president and the first lady, and it all just boils down to the pigmentation of his skin, because he's African-American. And it's just, and the fact that people are spewing this stuff all over the airwave and all over the internet, some of the stuff I've read, some of the blogs, and like I said, when I was in Mississippi in the South and hearing folks on the radio, just the meanness and the nastiness of the comments, and, you know, just the comments and relating the president to, you know, different types of animals. It's awful, Dr. Williams.
Well, you know, just this past week or so, there was a gentleman who's in charge of children and getting, he's supposed to be helping to get negative things off the air for children. I think his name is Brent Bozell. And yet you heard him refer to the president, starting off using it as an example about calling this would be like calling the president a skinny ghetto junkie or something to that effect. And then that wasn't so bad, but then he went on to say, especially when it's true. I mean, and that's the point that I mean, it absolutely floored me. Here's somebody who's out there expecting us to follow him and to try to get these negative images off television for our young people, and yet he comes out and says something like that about the president of the United States. And, you know, there's just been so much more disrespect. We went through that, the congressman calling the president a lie publicly. You note that sometimes, particularly Republicans, come out with all kinds of negative things against the president. It's almost like they just, you know, they can't control themselves. In other words, they've forgotten all of their manners, even if they hated the president. They've just forgotten what good manners are in terms of office, you know, and having respect for certain office. We've seen, as you said, the president compared to a monkey. We've seen just so many things going viral. And you wonder why, because here you have one of the nicest, most personable presidents in the country. He's a family man. He has beautiful daughters. And yet just last week, I think it was, you heard silly threats against the president and against his daughters. And it's unbelievable. A little thing like the dog, which was on their Christmas card, you know, like it was signed from the whole family and Bo. You get a congressman who has nothing else to do but to criticize that fact that something about no mention of Christmas or Christ or Christmas trees or the traditional things. And yet when MSNBC went back and researched other presidents and what they sent out on Christmas cards, they did the same thing. I mean, you know, George Bush was always talking about his dog, you know. There were a lot of presidents who had dogs and they played up those dogs. But simply trying to find something about this president, they criticized them for having their dog on their Christmas card.
Dr. Williams, it has just it's like it's added fuel to the fire, because a lot of people are already on edge, and so you have people who, you know, my father used to always say, when a person show you who they are, then believe it, believe that's who they are. And when you have these leaders on TV and on the radio spewing this this hate, and then you have people who are already mentally unstable and looking for any reason or whatever to act a clown or be evil, then this is what you got. I mean, and the things that they say about our first family, this beautiful, I mean, absolutely brilliant. They're beautiful. They're smart. He's a family man. You cannot criticize him in any of those areas. Value, family values. They're just a great example of black family and what black family represent, and what not just black, but family, and what a husband represent and a father. But yet he gets all this. It's just, when I tell you the things that are said that are so mean, it's just way, and it takes it to, you would think that these folks, this is the president of the United States, there would be some decorum and some etiquette, and there's some, you know, pump and circumstance, so you're supposed to act a certain way. As my mama say, now you know you were raised a certain way, and there's certain things you do and certain things you don't do, certain things you say and certain things you don't say. But these people just have taken the office of the presidency under this president to a whole different level, Dr.
Well, and continuing on the first family, I don't know if you heard this past week where a congressman James Sensenbrenner from a Republican from Wisconsin had the nerve to comment on the First Lady. I'm told he actually used more vulgar words when he initially made the comments, but just this past week was overheard talking about the First Lady. And, you know, it just seems, as you said, that there's no end to what they will do to a beautiful family who's doing the very best that they can against all this pushback, this unnecessary pushback that they're getting, you know, from the outside, when they're trying to do the right thing, when they're representing family values. It's just an untold amount, an unnecessary amount of silliness that's coming out of particularly men. I mean, I know Ann Coulter and Sarah Palin and Michelle Malkin say stupid things sometimes about them, but it's the men, the white men in particular, who, some of them, who just seem to be absolutely going off the deep end because they cannot handle the fact that we have a black family in the White House, even though a large majority of the American people elected them.
That's absolutely correct, Dr. William. And not only did Congressman Jim Sensenbrenner say these things in the Reagan Airport, he was in a lounge, but he was at a Christmas bazaar at a church in Wisconsin, and was openly talking around the table, oh, here she is talking about a health program and healthy living and a, you know, Let's Move It campaign, and here she is with the big posterior, you know, just openly talking about this. And he thought that he was, quote, amongst people who are of like mind. And some of the women were very offended and told.
And I think more of us, that's what more of us should do. We should call these people, no matter who they are, into account. And he had the nerve to even apologize privately to the First Lady. But I have said that is not enough, because to me, he offended the entire nation. Michelle Obama is the First Lady of the entire nation. So a private apology is not enough. I think he owes an apology to not only every black woman, but to every woman, every person in this nation for treating the First Lady in such a derogatory manner, whether he was joking or not, because he made these statements, you know, in front of other people.
Yes, and I agree with you 100%. He needs to make a public apology. It doesn't need to be a private apology because
right.
I was very offended by it as a black woman.
Right, you know, black women have had to put up with this nonsense since the shameful days of slavery in this nation. And obviously, Mr. Sensenbrenner has not heard that slavery ended a long time ago, and he has no right to treat our brilliant and beautiful First Lady that way. It's an insult to all women. And, you know, how would he feel if a man made similar remarks about his spouse or daughter or any female in Sensenbrenner's life? Now, I've said for a long time, Michelle Obama has a perfect physique. I mean, there are women of all nationalities, cultures, who would just kill for the beautiful, you know, for her wonderful brain and beautiful body, because I have seen her on many occasions, and I don't know what Mr. Sensenbrenner is looking at, but something must be wrong with his mind as well as his eyes if he thinks that, you know, there's anything unattractive about her. So I've just never heard him make any negative remark about any non-black woman's body, so I think that's a liberty that he felt he could take with a black woman. And it wasn't a slip of the tongue. As you said, he'd made those remarks weeks ago. But then was overheard bragging about what he had said then as he was retelling the incident which he was discussing the First Lady's body. I mean, this is the wife of the President of the United States, and he feels that he can denigrate her in that way. So what would he do to you or to me?
Oof. I can only imagine, and you're absolutely right. The First Lady, she personifies. She's beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing, and I tell people all the time, you know, as you get older, you're supposed to get wiser. And the beauty is not, you know, outwardly, but she is just absolutely brilliant. And it radiates. I mean, she's smart. She's calm. She's real graceful. And
involved.
I just love her strip. Just beautiful. She just, I would love to have her as a girlfriend. Say, hey, sister girl. You know, this is one of my close sister girlfriends.
Yeah. And, you know, the First Lady is a very tall woman, so whatever it is he thinks of her, her body is in perfect proportion. I know it's funny for us to be here talking about her body, but I just want the world to know I've seen her up close and personal, and I know that she's wonderful, she's beautiful, her proportions are exactly right, and as I said, many of us would love to have them. But the point is, she is trying to get the nation to be more fit. And even if she's not perfect, I don't think she ever said that she was perfect. She wants our children to grow up and to be better and to be healthy. That's the whole point of it. It's not so much that you should be thin or whatever, or have large hips, but it's to be healthy. That's what she's been trying to get us to do.
And I agree with you, Dr. Williams. And the thing that I most like about her, and I think that I have the same personality, is that she doesn't take herself too seriously. I mean, she's so laid back. She has a great sense of humor. The other night I saw the interview with Barbara Walters, and she's just so laid back, and she's not pretentious. And I just absolutely love that, because here she is in one of the most powerful, one of the most visible positions in the world. But yet she's so relaxed, great sense of humor, and so non-pretentious. And I just have the utmost respect for her for being just so down to earth. I just love it.
Yeah. Well, you know, as I said earlier, I didn't comment on Rush Limbaugh saying stupid things about her, or Michelle Malkin, or Sarah Palin, or Ann Coulter, or any of those making the silly remarks about her Let's Move campaign, because I concluded that they don't know any better. I mean, they're just some people who just are totally don't know. I mean, no matter how many degrees they have, they just don't know any better. But Mr. Sensenbrenner, a congressman, can't get away with that. I mean, he's elected to represent all the people of his district in Wisconsin and is presumed to be sane. So as a result of that, I've called upon women, especially women leaders, to call his office, you know, starting tomorrow morning. I think they're open again tomorrow morning. And just tell Mr. Sensenbrenner how you feel about the stupidity and demand that he apologize to the American people for denigrating the nation's first lady. And if they don't know the number, I can sure give it out. The congressional switchboard is 202-224-3121, 202-224-3121. And he also has an office in Wisconsin. And that number is 262-784-1111. That's 262-784-1111. In addition to that, I sent a fax because I wanted there to be a record to let him know how some people feel about what he said about the First Lady. And the fax number, if anyone wants to send a fax, and I would encourage you to do that, it's 262-784-9437. That's 262-784-9437. We have to begin to challenge these silly things that people say about the First Family. And they're saying them only because they're African-American. I said, because we've seen a lot of people in the White House, not so intelligent, unattractive, whatever, but I have not heard anyone have the gall to publicly say things like they have said about this First Family. And I know, Clem, when you call up, the staff will probably say that. He's apologized to the First Lady, but he owes all of us an apology, and we shouldn't let him off the hook.
I agree with you 100%. And also, if you could email me those numbers, I'll put them out on Twitter.
Okay. All right, will do. And one of the things we need to do right now is take a brief break, and when we come back, we'll go to some other events, starting with the tsunami and the earthquake in Japan. We'll start there. We're going to break. For those of you who are just joining us, this is Celebrating Truth, and we'll be right back.
Now back to Celebrating Truth.
Thank you so much, Corey. Welcome back to Celebrating Truth. We have Clem Clark, our producer, with us today, and we're just discussing some of the happenings of 2011 and the lessons learned as we go into 2012. Now, Clem, there was a big earthquake and tsunami in Japan. Until just a few years ago, I think most of us had never heard of a tsunami, and when this came up in Japan, it was almost unreal. Clem, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Oh, okay. Yeah, so the earthquake, it was really scary. I came from the West Coast, too, and I had been accustomed to, you know, small earthquakes, even large ones sometimes, but certainly nothing of the magnitude of the one that the people had in Japan. And as each day went by, I mean, you just kept wondering, can it get any worse?
Yeah, absolutely, Dr. Williams. I remember vividly the night, in the middle of the night when it happened, because I just so happened, I was up, I couldn't sleep, and CNN came across. You know how they're very dramatic when it's breaking mm-hmm. news. They had this breaking news, and mm-hmm. they talked about the earthquake, and then shortly thereafter, the tsunami, and then we had here in San Francisco, we had you know how they do the emergency services? We had one of those, the TV mm-hmm. start frizzing, and we had one of those emergency services breakthrough saying there's a tsunami warning for San Francisco, and all of a sudden my phone, a family member all on the East Coast, because a 3-hour difference, they were calling, people were emailing, mm-hmm. people were texting, saying, hey, Clem, what are you guys going to do? You better get out. There's a tsunami. And it was just extraordinary. And I remember seeing it as it was almost like real time. They were videotaping the first of all, they had talked about the 8.9 earthquake, and then they talked about the 23-feet wave, the tsunami, and how it just, I saw that water just coming in and just moving trucks and houses, everything that was in its path. It was just extraordinary. I've never seen anything like that.
That's right, and they were talking about the possibility of it coming on to San Francisco. Yeah, I'd sort of forgotten about that, but at times like that, friends, family, you know, tend to draw together. Wouldn't it be wonderful if we did that all of the time, though, and not wait for something tragic to happen? And I hope in 2012 more people will begin to think about the fact that we're not in control of a whole lot, you know. When God gets ready to do something, it's done, and we don't have a thing to do with it. So we need to make the most of the life that we have, the times when we could say to someone, I love you, the times when we could do a good deed for a neighbor or for a friend, and, you know, just be prepared. I mean, we spend so much of our time being negative and bringing others down that should be a lesson as we go into 2012. We're all so vulnerable, you know, and it's just amazing that we should want to see bad things happening to other people.
Yeah, I agree with you more, and that is my prayer coming into 2012. I tell people I want to live, love, laugh more, you know, be prayerful, be positive, and continue to be hopeful because, like you said, you know, we wait until things happen, and then we're reactionary. But all during the year, I mean, it's just this. So everything is so negative, and everybody just seem like they enjoy and rejoice in other people's mm-hmm. failures. And I don't, Dr. Williams, I don't believe in that because I feel like this, today me, tomorrow you. And so mm-hmm. we need to come together, and we need to not wait until something horrific happens, and then we come together as family and friends. And I agree with you in 2012. I pray that it will be more coming together from a positive perspective rather than from a tragedy.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, we got a lot of other issues here we want to cover. Let's just go for a moment to the death of Osama bin Laden. I think that happened on a Sunday night. Where were you when that happened, and what were you thinking?
I was lying across my bed, and my brother called from Virginia Beach. He was in the Navy. And he said, girl, put on CNN, breaking news, the president is getting ready to speak. And he said, guess who did it? And he said, the Navy SEALs. And my brother was in the Navy. He wasn't a SEAL.
But mm-hmm. I have a brother who was in the Navy, too.
Uh-huh. And he was on the Dwight Eisenhower. And he said, Clem, it was the SEAL Team 6 that did it. And he's very familiar with all that because he's
uh-huh.
in the Navy. So I was at home when
uh-huh.
it happened.
Yeah, well, while you know, you don't look forward to the death of anyone, but you do have to think back to when President George Bush was in the White House and went out and made the big show of mission accomplished and all, and, you know, then basically got to a point where it seems that they weren't going to be able to get Osama bin Laden to keep from having all this havoc he was accused of creating, and he then finally said, you know, I don't think about him on an everyday basis, but you have this president who under the greatest of odds came in, and it was under his watch that it finally happened. Let's move now to the Arab Spring, because that was another big event during 2011. God, we had so much happen. The downfall of the Tunisian president. You know, and you just really hadn't heard of a whole lot of turmoil in Tunisia, but apparently the people thought so. Then there was President Hosni Mubarak in Egypt. And it's really sad what's going on there now because they still haven't gotten it together with him out. And then, of course, Muammar Gaddafi. I mean, that was probably the one we sat around for weeks wondering what was going to happen. And then you add to that now what's happening in Syria. And again, you just cannot believe that people can be so evil and you know, so want to control others that they would go to the lengths that some of these leaders have gone. So what do you think will happen here in Syria? That's the next one, I guess, that we're looking at many negative things going on there. I know, thought that once his father had passed on, that President of Syria would be a better president, but it doesn't seem like it's turning out to be that way.
No, and I agree with you, Dr. Williams, and I think that there is going to be more upheaval in Syria, and I think you'll see eventually probably an ousting of that president, because like you said, when you go back to talk about the Tunisian and Mubarak and Gaddafi, and it just seemed like that we will, you know, get into talk, the year of the protest, the people voices were heard, mm-hmm. and people are tired, sick and tired of just being taken for granted, and they are uprising, and they're making sure that their voice is going to be heard. So back to Syria, I think there's going to be more upheaval and more mm-hmm. uprising, and they're going to overthrow him.
Well, my prayers certainly go out to our brothers and sisters in Syria, and I hope it does not take as long to resolve it, because people are fast dying there today. I think I heard a number like 5,000. Many people from the Arab leaders are on their way there now, trying to get ahead of it and put an end to it. Let us just pray that they're successful in bringing up President Bashar Assad to his senses. Now, while we're on protests, the big one, the really big one, right here in the United States, the Occupy movement. What are your comments on the Occupy movement?
I tell you, it's amazing how one person, two people, or just the movement of one, it just started out, you know, as a voice needing to be heard, occupying Wall Street, New York, and then it spread all over the country.
Actually, all over the world. Now that I think about it, yeah,
all over the world. And I wish that they had more of a cohesive type of message. I wish it was a little bit more structured and organized. But their voices were heard, and they really made an impact here in Northern California. They shut down the port of Oakland, which is a billion-dollar industry where all kind of stuff is imported into the port to be able to, you know, to be able to get out all over the United States. And so they really made a huge impact here in Northern California. So this is the year of the protesters.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's certainly one that I think will carry over into 2012. As you know, Time Magazine named the protesters as, quote, person of the year. I think that's really, really big. We have seen some of the protest sites close down across the country. We've seen where there's been violence against some of the protesters by some of the city leaders. We've been pretty blessed here in Washington, D.C. We have two camps set up at McPherson Square and again on Freedom Plaza here in Washington, D.C., and our protesters have, except for just a few small incidents, I guess we can say that we've been pretty fortunate, because people have been able to exercise their right to protest. And how some people do not understand that they are in that 99%, it just baffles me. But I hear people all the time, you know, say, we got to get them out of here. What are they doing here? I say, they are representing you. They're representing me. They're representing all of us, because I don't know that I would want to spend a cold winter, as many of these people have spent outside, almost in a silent movement, but saying so much that we are representing people who are underserved. We're saying we're going to end all this Wall Street domination and the greed, corporate greed. And some people say, well, they haven't been specific, but they are being heard. And I think overall, generally, those who are affected, those who are the ones who are representing the corporate greed, I think they know what these people are out there for. And again, we usually use the word young people. They're not all young people. Many of them are, but they're people of all ages out there. And I just applaud them, and my prayers go up for them every night. Dick Gregory and I go out to visit with them from time to time. I know last weekend they were having a group here starting to fast on the issue of statehood from the Occupy movement. I have a statehood for the District of Columbia. As you know, we aren't considered a state, and we don't get all the same benefits of a state. And he took the time, Mr. Gregory took the time to go over and to talk with them about fasting, you know, and what they should be doing and how it should be done. And I'm just so pleased that people who aren't necessarily out there every day, or at least thinking about the people, taking them food, taking them clothing, I've done that on a few occasions, and I know many, many other people have given much more than I have because I recognize they're out there for my benefit and the benefit of my nieces, my nephews, and my friends. And so I just applaud them for what they're doing, and I pray that they don't get overly infiltrated by people who are trying to make it difficult for them, because it's not the true occupiers who are causing the trouble. It's generally someone who has come in and infiltrated their group and tried to cause a problem to get them shut down. And I hope people will, realize that. It's not the occupiers. They're not out there just to be playing around or, getting in trouble or what have you. They're doing everything they can to prevent there from being trouble. They're just trying to call attention to some of the problems we need to clean up in this country.
That's right. I agree with you.
Well, what's happening with Occupy in San Francisco? Are they still camped out and open?
No, they pretty much have cleared them out. They had been for a couple of months right in front of the ferry building, and the mayor finally, because all the business owners were complaining, so they cleared them out. But mm-hmm. every other day you hear about them setting up camp again in front of the Federal Reserve Bank. So we'll see. But they're not, it's not as big as it once was, because the tents, there were like 100 or so tents mm-hmm. out at Justin Herman Plaza, but now they pretty much cleared out.
Mm-hmm. Okay, but what we have seen, when one group is closed down, another group pops up somewhere.
Right.
So we pray that we will continue to make progress. They will continue to call attention to things that will help the poor and the underserved. Okay, now let's move to, the Casey Anthony trial. We didn't talk about that, the not guilty verdict. What was your thinking on that?
Well, I was a little surprised that she was found not guilty, but the jury spoke, and the thing that I find interesting, this has been a very interesting year. I've noticed more and more of children coming up missing. I don't know if you heard about this latest incident in Waterville, Maine, where this 20-month-old toddler, she just disappeared out of her. She was at her father's home in the bedroom, and you're hearing more and more of these type of incidents happening. The mother. The car runs out of gas, and she takes the older child and leaves the small baby in the car, and the baby now missing. You mm-hmm. hear all these different stories of these children mm-hmm. coming up missing,
mm-hmm.
vanish.
Yeah, well, I don't know. I mean, children are having a difficult time, with sometimes parents being on drugs, sometimes alcoholics, just not getting along. Again, that calls for all of us as adults to grow up. It's time for us to grow up and for us to be responsible for our neighbors' children. You know, there was a time, I remember, when if the mother or the father could not take care of their children, the neighbors helped to take care of them. And I think we've all got to just keep our eyes open for these young children and try to help wherever we can. We've got to go back to being, the keeper of our brother and our sister, because too many tragedies are happening when we just turn our heads and walk on by.
That's right.
Now, let's see. We've got, we can't go without talking about the Republican primary.
Oh, yes.
There's some strange ups and downs there. And I don't remember, but how many did they start out with in this primary?
Well, they started out probably with 15 or 16. Now that has dwindled down to just almost a handful. What an interesting saga reality show this has been.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And one of the things about it is that, as you said, every week just about somebody drops off. Before these people got into this race, I am sure they knew about those things in their past that were going to come up. This week it's Newt Gingrich, and I don't know if you noticed, CNN did some research on whether his first divorce was as he said it was.
I saw that.
He tried to claim that it was his wife who was much older than he was, I understand. But after they'd had two daughters, he decided to leave her, but he is claiming she wanted the divorce, and of course CNN has found documents saying that's not true. Now, one of the things we want from our leaders is truthfulness. And, Mr. Gingrich can lecture us like the professor, but apparently he forgot that, the truth will be found out. So, you can go around trying to back away from it, but it will ultimately come up when you run for president. That's the main job in the country, so people will go to all extremes to find out about the truth. And then, of course, Ron Paul. I had begun to kind of halfway like him, except for that statement he made about Medicare and about letting people die and what have you. But just recently, there's another story out on him. Can you kind of update us on that one?
Yes, and before I update you on that real quick, I would have to tell you, I think this is not the phrase of 2011, but the phrase of the century when Newt Gingrich was interviewed early this year, and he said the reason why there was infidelity is because of my patriotism.
Oh, my.
So I was like, okay, I love that. So I'll, you know, when people, I say, oh, I blame it on their patriotism. But anyway, going back to Congressman Ron Paul, yes, back in the 80s and 90s, I lived, before I moved to San Francisco, I lived in Austin, Texas for 10 years. And the congressman, he used to have all these different newsletters that he would write. And it was interesting, some of the articles that were written were so derogatory toward black men and downright racist. Mm-hmm. And so he's saying, Congressman Ron Paul, this has been haunting him for years when he ran for Congress and when he ran for president. And now it's coming back to haunt him again, these newsletters that he said, oh, I was the editor. Yeah, I may remember. His story has changed. Yeah, I remember reading it, but I don't know if I wrote it. So it's very, he's not.
Or he didn't read them all.
Yes. Mm-hmm. He's not saying, no, I don't agree with it. He's just saying, oh, well, I don't, you know, he's coming up with all kind of far-out stories.
It may be a word in about our brother, Herman Cain, who, bless his heart, looks like he was just on his way up, 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 so much that he forgot all about us. In fact, he said, if we weren't rich, it's our own fault. I mean, all the family, these are all the family values people. Isn't it interesting how many of them have, their downfall has been a lack of family values?
Hypocritical.
So you just have to be careful what you're saying, what you're doing, because it all does come back to haunt you.
That's right.
And a last issue probably will have to be a little bit about middle-class tax and voter suppression.
Okay.
How did you feel about that middle-class tax break passing the other night?
I was relieved, and it's a sad shame. I can see why Congress rating is so low. It's almost at a zero.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, to wait till the 12th hour to be able to go ahead and move forward with it. But I'm glad it happened. I wish that they had followed the president's lead and did it for all of 2012. But you know, he did it for the next 2 months. But I was very pleased because I have a lot of friends who are unemployed and who are receiving unemployed benefits. So I was glad that it took place.
Right. But a lot of positive things are beginning to happen, even though they're not always on the news. But one of the things that we need to be mindful of as we go into 2012, and that is all of these measures that are attempting to suppress the vote in 2012. This is serious because the bills have been introduced by Republican legislatures and governors all across the country to make it more difficult for people to vote. So we should keep an eye on that in Maine, Ohio, South Carolina, Florida, Kansas, Texas. All of them have some form of making it more difficult for people to vote by abolishing same-day registration to vote or shortening the time of early voting or making it impossible for students to vote where they are in college or, you know, just changing the rules on third parties registering people, like the case in Kansas with the women who, you know, always try to get people registered and involved, the League of Women Voters, I was trying to say, and then just making it harder to vote, period. So we need to keep an eye on those, and as we go into 2012, and make sure that our own registration is in order. Okay, do you have any closing comments here?
Sure. Real quick on this, I want to be very clear to your listening audience. This voter suppression is happening in over 40 states. Dr. Williams, bills have been introduced by Republican legislators in over 40 states.
Mm-hmm.
So that's big. So as we close out this 2011 year, Dr. Williams, I want to thank you for your leadership. And I want to thank your listening audience for being so loyal and faithful and tuning in every week. And again, I want to wish everybody a very glorious and joyous Happy New Year and a very safe New Year.
And thank you for being on with me and for all that you do to make this program Celebrating Truth possible. I'd like to end our program by saluting members of the National Congress of Black Women for the great work that they do. This week's honorees, I want to salute all of the leaders who make so much of a difference in the communities across the nation where we are. And to our listeners, I also want to invite you to become members of the National Congress of Black Women. When you look around in your community and you think about community service at its best, we want you to know that's the National Congress of Black Women, because we are truly women who are making a difference. So join us by calling 202-678-6788 or going to our website at nationalcongressbw.org. Well, that's it for Celebrating Truth today, and we thank you for listening the entire year. We look forward to being with you in 2012. Thank you, Clem.
Thank you so much, Dr. Williams.